1, 2, 3.
You're listening to Sports Talk Chicago with your host, John Zagluhl.
John, I am fantastic. Thank you for having me. You got an awesome voice, man, and that was a terrific intro. You're like a pro's pro.
You know, that was the first time somebody ever said that, John. No, you're the first person to ever say anything like that. That's very interesting.
You got it, John. Anything for a fellow Chicago guy.
Well, what a great question.
That's a great question. Nobody's actually asked me that.
I like it. What a great question. I never heard that before.
Chase Utley is what? You're saying he's not a Hall of Fame candidate?
You know, it's funny. You may be the only person that I've heard make that connection.
Thank you, John, for having me. I'm doing great. By the way, you have an outstanding voice. Not sure about your face because I haven't met you, but your voice is great.
You're doing a much better job than I ever did. You've had some heavy hitters guests on too, man, so keep up the good work. But it's good to be with you, and I'm ready to talk sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zagluhl. Great to have you here. On today's edition of the program, the Bears have released their final roster. We'll talk about who made it and who didn't in just a moment, plus a brand-new interview today with Bill Rogers, sports writer for Forbes.com and a BBWAA member. We talked with him about some Cubs and White Sox news, the Mets and the booing scandal, and so much more. It's a great interview, and it comes your way near the midway point of this show. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluhl. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Before we start today, I have to tell you about State Farm agent Brian McDevitt. A lot of our listeners have gone to him for all their insurance needs, and he's been very helpful in getting them the coverage they deserve. There's no games with Brian. He's just here to help and make sure you feel safe. So if you have insurance needs and you haven't called him yet, what are you waiting for? Dial up the number, 630-796-2662. That's 630-796-2662. Or find him online at RyanIsMyAgent.com. That's RyanIsMyAgent.com. And make sure to mention Sports Talk Chicago. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. I want to start today with this. We were all wrong. We were so concerned about the quarterback competition. We spewed opinions left and right, me included. Made a lot of videos about who should start, why they should start. When should Fields come in? Should he sit all year? We made so many videos about it. We talked our asses off about it. But the truth is, as we see the Bears make their cuts to the roster, there's a much bigger concern than the quarterback position. A dire concern. It echoes kind of what I said last week. This team needs help. Justin Fields will not succeed if he has no team around him. And this could be a situation where he's talented, throws the ball well, elevates some players, but because he doesn't have anything around him, he may not work. As of today, the Bears only have 4 cornerbacks. I'll repeat that. As of today, the Bears only have 4 cornerbacks. 4. Lost Kyle Fuller. What a horrible move that was this offseason. And now all they have for the secondary is 4 guys. Jalen Johnson, Kendall Vildor, Duke Shelley, and Xavier Crawford. I don't know what they're going to do. Look, if you can't defend the pass game, you're going to lose. Just plain and simple. There's no capacity for them offensively to keep up in a shootout. That's just a fact. They do not have the capacity nor the talent offensively to put up 30 points a game, especially if Matt Nagy's calling the plays. So when you can't protect the deep ball, when you have nothing to help you, when you have only literally 4 cornerbacks on the roster in and of itself, you're in big trouble. Not like all those guys are household names, too. Dan Wiederer said veteran cornerbacks Artie Burns and Desmond Trufant were both let go. The Bears' depth chart at quarterback right now seems questionable. Rookie Thomas Graham Jr. was also waived, but will likely be back in the practice squad. Not going to win with 4 cornerbacks, plain and simple. I don't care who you are. I don't care how many points you score as a team. Unless you're Patrick Mahomes and you have the weapons that Mahomes has, Tyreek Hill, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Travis Kelce, you are not going to beat any team You're not going to win with four cornerbacks. Plain and simple. And it'd be different if these guys were top-tier guys. Darrell Revis in his prime. Something like that. But that's not the case here. Johnson had an okay year last year, but not all these guys are really household names. They're not superstars. They're really nothing. Boy, did we get this one wrong? I'll keep saying it. We were so concerned. Fields, Dalton, who's going to start? I'm going to cry if Fields doesn't start game one. It's a travesty to sit him. But in reality, it won't matter who starts game one. It won't matter who starts game 15. Not if you only have four cornerbacks. The receivers, too. Dans Newsome was cut. Well, put on waivers. Very surprising. I certainly didn't expect it. I really thought Newsome would actually be a key piece on this team. I know Rodney Adams outplayed him, and Rodney Adams deserved the spot, no question. But I really thought Daz Newsome would kind of be like a Darnell Mooney. Fifth round pick, he was sixth round, maybe he could turn something in and put up a good performance. He did nothing. Riley Ridley was put on waivers too. Really don't understand either of those two moves. Now, the Bears talked very highly of Ridley in the past, but he never played. Newsome was very much hyped up, now technically never played. They also lost Javon Wims. That was last week. Now, the Bears just did sign Rashad Perriman to a one-year deal. Great move, in my opinion. 12 games last year, 500 receiving yards. Known to be a deep threat, usually, averaging about 16.5 yards per catch. Love the move. When's he going to play? Where's he going to go? Is he the number three wide receiver? Robinson, Mooney, Perriman, not bad. But I don't like the way they dealt with Newsome. Kind of faked everybody out, you know? They hyped him up a lot. Actually, more hype than he deserved. Now he's cut. What? I don't get it. Totally faked us out on that one, and I didn't expect that whatsoever. That was really a shock to see. Now we have more news, too. Tariq Cohen's on the PUP list. Tariq Cohen will not be playing to start the year. He will miss the first six games of the season. Kevin Jenkins is on the IR already. I mean, this team's already banged up. We haven't even played a game yet. There hasn't been one game yet. And we're still talking about injuries. IR stints. 6 weeks missing. Pretty surprising to me. Look, I knew this team wasn't great. I knew they weren't, a 12-win team, division winner. But they're already dealing with injuries. And they only have four cornerbacks. You tell me what the problem is. I am genuinely shocked. I'm just surprised. I don't know how to react to this. Now, the good thing is Khalil Herbert, Damian Williams, David Montgomery will anchor the backfield. So the run game is fine without Cohen. That's the good thing. But the receiving game to me is still up in question. I don't know what Perriman's going to do here, especially since he was just signed today. I don't know how that's going to play out. You lose Newsome. You lose Wims, which was a great move. You bring in Rodney Adams. Andy Dalton is your week one starter as of today. You only have four cornerbacks, too. Danny Trevathan's hurt. And Alec Ogletree is expected to make the roster. I mean, these are so many small things, but when you put them all up on a list, you kind of go, yikes. Like, what happened? This is a beat-up football team. And that's scary. That's very scary to see them at this point without one game being played in this position. I'm telling you, we were all wrong, dead wrong about this team. And there were some of you, to your credit, who always posted this offseason. What about the defense? What's going to happen with the defense? The defense is regressing. They're aging. You were all 100% right. You know who you are. Look, I knew they'd regress, but I didn't think this would happen. I didn't think they'd start the season with four cornerbacks. That I just didn't expect at all. You can all agree or disagree, but here's the fact of the matter. This team right now is a 7-win team max, even if Justin Fields plays. And again, that's not an indictment on Fields. He has nothing around it. Look, when the Bears went 12-4 in 2018 with Mitch, I will admit that the defense had a lot to do with that. 30-plus turnovers, always found a way to shorten up the field for Mitch, made things easier. He was comfortable, the defense was comfortable, Everybody worked. This year, if you're a quarterback, you have no O-line. Tariq Cohen's hurt. You've got a brand new wide receiver who hasn't even practiced with you yet. Then you go to the defense and you're like, what are they going to do? No secondary, so if I'm a quarterback, I better put up 30 points a game or else we're screwed. Not the right message you want to send. Believe it or not, defenses help quarterbacks win games. They have the ability to shorten the field, limit the other team that comforts the quarterback, allows him to go off and not have to worry about putting up 30, 40 points a game. So when you have this issue, when it's being said that you have no secondary, that one of your running backs is hurt, that you bring in a new wide receiver today, you cut Daz Newsome. How are you supposed to win football games regularly with all those moves? That's the concern I got. This really is not a good situation. I cannot underscore that enough. We were all so concerned and so enraptured in the Fields-Dalton controversy. I was more than anyone. I'll be honest, I was. I really did not want Fields to start right away. Unfortunately, he isn't. And when you look at this team today, tell me it'd be a good idea. I dare you. Tell me it'd be a good idea to put him out there with no secondary, the expectation to put up 30 points a game, an injured running back, and a brand new wide receiver you've never met before. Oh yeah, and that's right, no offensive line. Still, that's still a problem. It's not gone, it's just under the list now. It's not a new problem. I don't regret my stance on that. What I do regret is not talking about the other issues more. We were all bamboozled. I'm serious. We were all so worried about the quarterback situation that we forgot about the other stuff going on. The other issues with this team. That's why when people say the Bears are a 6-7-8 win team, I don't cringe. I don't get mad. That's about correct. Look at this roster. Four cornerbacks. No offensive line, new receivers, Tariq Cohen hurt. Tell me this team is going to be great. They're not. It's going to be a tough year. It really is. It's not going to be easy for this team to do anything. And that goes back to the draft. And we talked about them taking Fields. What was the point of the 2021 season? Development. Development. Fields is going to come in week four. And if he could go 500... and show signs of improvement over time, that's all that matters. That's it. This is not a playoff year. This is not a win 12 games, win the division year. This is all about developing Fields to be your franchise guy. Some could say, well, that means putting him in right away. Not necessarily. That means bridging Dalton to Fields and having him play the rest of the way. When that happens, we need to see growth. The good thing is Fields will play with real wide receivers. So more of his passes won't be dropped. He'll have an okay run game. I mean, he should be okay from an offensive standpoint. The results, though, may not be there. That's because your defense is giving up 30 points a game. You can't tell me I'm wrong there either. The first string defense gave up 30-plus points to Mitch Trubisky in one half. What do you think is going to be different against Matthew Stafford week one in Los Angeles? No, not going to happen that way. Really think the cause for concern here is not Justin Fields and Andy Dalton. That will happen when it's supposed to happen. It's not a problem. It's not going to kill Fields to be put in week four. Everybody's going to complain and worry. At the end of the day, he'll come in when he's supposed to, and I'm sure he'll do fine. He won't be a bust. He won't be horrible. But we do want to see improvement. The real concern is how are you going to win one game with this defense? You're going to need to heavily rely on your offense to get things done. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I am saying it's going to be tough for a quarterback to perform under that pressure. Oh, it's the NFL. He should be able to do it. Well, not every quarterback, even the great ones, put up 30 points a game. It's not feasible. It's not feasible to do that. There are times in which you need help from your defense. It's just that simple. You're not going to be on every game. You're not going to be putting up 5 touchdowns a game. No. Sometimes you'll need a defensive stop, a forced fumble, an interception, not 60-yard touchdown again, and we're behind the eight ball. And the Bears in this situation, when you only have four corners, that could be a problem, a recurring problem that needs to be fixed. That's the main concern here. We really don't know how that's all going to play out for the Bears. We all made a big mistake, admittedly. Me too. We worried so much about Fields and Dalton. Everybody did, not just me. Everybody was so enraptured. Staunch debates, name-calling, put in Fields, put in Dalton, everybody going back and forth. When in reality, whomever starts, whomever it is, they have no team around them. You're not going to win anything. Maybe Fields will be marginally better than Dalton, but with this team, with this roster, as it stands today, don't expect much success. I am still going to say 7-10. We're going to do a schedule prediction, too, and a big season preview next week. Right now, 7-10, top schedule, no team, quarterback controversy. You tell me which teams succeed in that environment. Name me one. Bears fans, please temper expectations and remember, keep this in mind, what's the point of this season? We all knew no playoff appearance. Come on. No way. No Super Bowl. Not yet. The number one reason the Bears would even compete this year was for development. Is this team a proven winner? Can we galvanize and rally around Justin Fields? Is he a real quarterback? Or is this all fake? Need to find out. This is the year to do it. Imagine if Fields plays 8 or 9 games, puts up decent numbers, and there's growth, development. Next year starts all year, and the Bears are a 12-win team. Possible. But you can't start winning unless you go through some pains first. Very few quarterbacks come in and just win. Not because of their talent, but because of the team around them, too. That plays a big factor here. Justin Fields could come in, throw for 300 yards a game, 2 touchdowns, 1 pick, or 3 touchdowns, 1 pick. It won't matter if the defense can't limit the other team. If this defense can't shut down the deep ball, the other teams are scoring 21, 25, 30 points a game, it's going to be pretty damn tough to even win one game, no matter how well Fields does. He'll have to throw for literally 5 touchdowns a game. And I love Justin Fields, but there is no way that's going to happen. So just something to be concerned over. The fact that they have this many injuries and the season hasn't started yet is appalling, number one. The fact that we worried so much about quarterbacks when that really won't be the problem is even worse, number two. And this team today, as it's assembled, is a 7-win team at best, number three. More to come. You're on Sports Talk Chicago. My interview with Bill Rogers comes up next, so stay tuned. Talk Chicago. Everett John Zagluel, and we are back and ready for today's special guest. He's a Forbes sports writer, BBWAA member, and a best-selling author. Please welcome Phil Rogers to the program. Phil, it's great to have you on. How are you?
Thanks very much, John. Doing well.
So, Phil, let me ask you this to start. Have you ever booed a reader of your work?
No, I never have, but I've certainly been booed by a lot of readers, and I've learned the value of thick skin through the years, for sure.
What do you think would happen if you did that?
Well, he'd be more likely to just tune me out and stop reading. I mean, I'm sure back in the old days when you got more than 140 characters and it was email, you know, I had some exchanges and when people would get angry, you know, I would pretty much just go with, you know, thanks for reading me. And I think we agree to disagree, but thanks for reading me. And let it go at that. And, you know, I think people appreciated the fact that I would let them vent and they could call me an idiot. I wouldn't feel the need to call them an idiot in return.
How do you think this all applies then to the Baez and Lindor situation in New York? What was your reaction when you saw what they did?
Yeah, I guess I see it both ways. My initial reaction, knowing New York City fans, is just how stupid it is, and you know how. In my opinion, we're in an era where athletes athletes patronize fans. Every team, every city, the people say, "Oh, our fans are the best fans. This is the best city." A lot of times the media and the fans patronize the players while they're there. Oh, you're the greatest. And then as soon as they're out of town, people start telling bad stories about, I always knew this and this, but they never said it, when the guy was in their market. And it's not really respect to me. It's a period of patronization, and it kind of goes both sides. And so it's surprising, when people are so openly non-patronizing, and it's far worse when it's a new guy, Javier Baez in New York, guy who just got there, versus somebody who's lived through some real stuff. So I thought it was really silly on his part. You know, on the other side, it wasn't the middle finger those guys gave fans. It was the turn down thumb. And, I think there's different degrees of reaction and outrage. And, I was glad it was the turn down thumb, not the upturned middle finger.
Did they deserve the booze spill based on their performance?
Probably, and it really starts, if you look at the whole team, with Lindor getting off to the bad start after signing the $300+ million contract. I'll say I do fantasy baseball and have for probably about 10 years. I was kind of a late adopter to it, but I enjoy it now. And one thing that when I'm drafting teams and thinking about them, that first year after a player changes and goes to a new team in free agency, more often than not, there's a little difficulty and drama and adjustment to it, and the guy's better in the second year. But I think the Mets, when you look at the DeGrom injury, you look at them not having had Syndergaard as well, then Lindor gets off to a bad start. I mean, it's just a lot of recipes for disappointment for this fan base that thought, oh, this is our year. We're going to be better than the Yankees. We're going to take over New York. And it hasn't happened. So I understand why the fans are disappointed. And given that it's the athlete's job to produce, I would say they probably have deserved it. Javi Baez is having an absolutely miserable season that he covers up by the fact he hits home runs. To me, he's gone from being this multi-talented guy that had all the potential in the world to he's kind of a modern version of Juan Uribe. Juan Uribe was a good fielder. He hit home runs, but he struck out a lot and he never walked. I mean, the strikeout walk ratio for Javier Baez is, in one word, disgraceful. He's gotten into terribly bad habits as his career's gone on. And people like Jim Hendry, who was the Cubs GM when he drafted him, and I think Theo Epstein, when he got to know him early in his tenure, would be really disappointed by his development as a player because he had the potential to be so much more, but he got caught up into the big plays and the long ball.
I'm surprised, and I saw this stat the other day, Phil. In the past 162 games for Baez, it's something like 200+ strikeouts and only 20+ walks. I mean, that's not sustainable to be a Major League Baseball player.
No, it isn't. And, you see there was that, I don't know if it would be proper to call it a meme, but this video that went around a week ago of Javi swinging and missing, and literally he couldn't have hit this pitch with a canoe paddle. He missed so badly that it became a thing. And it's not the way you see professional big league ball players swing at the ball. And, he's had, I don't know, with the Cubs, he had a different hitting coach every year. That couldn't have been good for him. But he's had some smart people around him, I'm sure. And he's just gotten caught up in, you know, instead of having a lot of games where you contribute little things, I think every game he goes into, he wants to be the star of the game. And it's a selfish approach, and unsustainable is the right word. And I will be very surprised if he doesn't get a harsh wake-up call when he hits free agency after the season. And it will have more to do with his performance than the thumbs down to the Mets fans. You know, I he's a guy that I think always expected $200 to $300 million. You know, I think when Lindor got the deal a year ago, I think he thought, well, I can get a Lindor contract, but he hasn't performed and produced in the way that would make any team that eager to go out and make super big long-term commitments to him. So, you know, he could be a one-year free agent guy that has to go out and reestablish himself with a good 2022 season, since 2021 is getting to the end and he's disappointed so badly.
How do you think he corrects these issues? I mean, I suggested back when he was with the Cubs with this strikeout-to-walk ratio that he should be demoted straight up, and a couple of people chided me and said, well, his WAR is high, he contributes defensively, he runs the bases well. What do you think he could do to become who he was before, be better than he is today?
I think it just takes a lot more self-awareness than he has and that he has shown. And, you know, I don't know if it's getting a new voice around him that he will listen to that would help him. But, you know, I think he's going to, as all free agent players are this winter, he's going to be judged by the market. And, you know, he wouldn't be the first guy who, you know, thought, you know, everything about himself was great until he got judged by other people and then finds out, well, I've got to have to make some changes. If so, he's young enough to make changes and go back and use that potential. But I'm like you. I would point out in the Chicago Tribune from time to time or on blogs that when I was with MLB.com, you know, the Cubs were their best when Javi Baez was the second baseman and Addison Russell was the shortstop. And unfortunately for Addison Russell, he's had a short career due to his off-the-field issues. But, you know, people all just wanted to think, well, now Javi's a shortstop. He's destined to be the shortstop. Of course, you know, they got to get rid of Addison Russell and move on. It was kind of like it was just inevitable that he was going to be this Hall of Fame level shortstop because he made some nice tags. I mean, his great plays are terrific. His base running instincts, and defensively, you know, some of the things he does, not other players do, but the other players that don't do those things make the routine players plays better and pretty much always did. And, you know, I think he's just going to have to look at himself honestly and say, I got to go out and work to not make so many errors. And, you know, in the biggest thing, I've got to change my approach at the plate and go back to working counts a little bit, hitting the ball. I mean, he's a lot like Sammy Sosa in terms of approach at the plate. And I only saw one guy that ever really got through to Sammy, and that was Don Baylor. And there was a short period of time after Sammy's MVP season in 98 when I think he actually was at his best. He was hitting balls to the opposite field. He was using the whole park, and he was running the bases hard. He was playing a better outfield. He had become a really good all-around player. And then he got back into the stuff with Barry Bonds, where they were huge rivals. And, again, it was all about just hitting the home runs. And I think we saw the tail end of his career be disappointing and probably briefer than people thought it would be. And, you know, I see Javi heading to that same place if he doesn't, make a lasting change when he sits down and looks at his 2021 season in production. And you're right to point out that it's not that it came out of nowhere this year. You know, he was, I would say, pretty much every year he was in Chicago, he was not as good of a player as he was the year before. And, you know, even though he's in an age where he should be moving into his prime years, it was just a disappointment kind of year after year. And it slid because he, you know, Chicago fans loved him and he wasn't held fully accountable for some of the regression. You know, I think this regression bears some responsibility to why the Cubs fell off after 2017. But I don't think he personally was really held accountable. And I think all of that is landing at his feet now.
Bill Rogers here on Sports Talk Chicago. Bill, let's talk about that Cubs team. How surprising is their collapse today?
It's shocking. I mean, you can't quantify it or qualify it. And, you know, I guess I was like everybody else. I got kind of fooled by the Ricketts commitment. There's no logical reason why, you know, they had to stop spending money on payroll. I mean, it's true that they did not get the best results from Theo Epstein's supersized baseball department. They invested a lot in front office salaries and failed to produce in drafts and in international signings, you know, and they never really got a good tier of prospects coming behind those guys that came up 7 or 8 years ago. And, you know, that led to the shortage. But you always had the ability to spend in free agency. I mean, I am stunned that they allowed all three of those guys to leave in Rizzo, Bryant, and Baez. I think it is unconscionable that they never redid Anthony Rizzo's contract to give him a deal that would have kept him in Chicago long term. You know, and I'm not sure. I certainly didn't sit in on the negotiations. I don't know what Chris Bryant was asking. I don't know what Javi Baez was asking, and I don't know what the Cub doctors said about Anthony Rizzo's back. But Rizzo contributed so much early on in the rebuild of that, and he did so while playing under this team-friendly contract that he never made a public issue of, and it just seemed like he was, to the degree that an athlete making $15 million a year can be taken advantage of, you know, I think the Cubs took advantage of Anthony Rizzo, and that's really disappointing to me.
Who's to blame for their current position today?
Well, you know, I think it's mostly the lack of financial commitment from ownership and this feeling that you have to regain in the short run. You know, they're kind of, to me, hiding behind the pandemic and the those games played without fans in the stands. The way I looked at it going back 15 months or however far we have to go to get to the start of this period of time for professional sports, you know, the Ricketts had built up Wrigley Field. They have all the investment vehicles or revenue producing vehicles there around Wrigley Field. I would think they would want to keep the team strong to support it. And I just thought, okay, this is going to be a short-term period when owners in baseball, including the Ricketts, have to suck it up, and baseball won't be as great financially for owners during this pandemic until we get past this pandemic. But then, you know, you look at appreciation of franchise values and just how great baseball has been for its owners. You know, they're just in a period where they either have to take losses or profits not as great, depending on who you talk to, or this rough period, and then you get past it and get back to business as usual. Obviously, Tom Ricketts, and I suspect it all starts with his father in Omaha. You know, I think Tom it's always been a Ricketts family operation, and Tom has been the front man. But I think Joe probably has made the big financial decisions. And it seems to me like without much transparency, the Ricketts have just totally pulled back. And I am hearing from baseball people that this is going to go on for 3 or 4 years, that the Ricketts family has made an economic decision to make money off of the Cubs for 3 or 4 years without seriously investing in the payroll. And that is a bit of a shell game based on what Tom Ricketts always said, and I also think it feels to me like he's kind of gone into a cave and is no longer as visible as he was during the good days when he was always there. And I thought on the front end, when they did the rebuild after hiring Theo Epstein, I thought they were remarkably honest and candid in, you know, telling fans to brace for some painful years, et cetera. But, you know, it just seems to me that all of that has reversed. And, you know, they're going to hand the town to the White Sox, which is really, really remarkable.
What was your reaction when you heard about the fact that they wouldn't invest in this team for 3 to 4 years? I mean, that's pretty shocking for me to hear personally, and I'm sure a lot of people don't know that.
Well, you know, I'll say the same person who I heard that from told me 2 months ago, no matter where the Cubs are in standing, people with the Cubs were telling other teams that they were going to trade Bryant, Baez, and Rizzo. It didn't matter even if they were in first place.
Really?
So the same people that told me that are now saying three to four years of just looking to make money off the team, not worry about fielding a competitive team. And, you know, it's not shocking to me now that I saw what happened with Bryant, Baez, Rizzo. And by my math, I'm not sure enough has been made about this, but by my calculations, if you go back to the winter before this year with Yu Darvish, you look at Kyle Schwarber going off, being non-tendered, that whole group, by the time they got done at the trade deadline, trading 7 or 8 players in July, I had it at about $150 million off the payroll for 15 players in 8 or 9 months. I mean, that is epic. And so by the time I got to the end of July and saw that, you know, the next piece doesn't really shock me, the 3 to 4 years, you know, clearly the whole thing is turned on its head, and all of a sudden the Ricketts have become, you know, the Wrigley family selling the entertainment of Wrigley Field and all that without worrying about, the competitiveness of the team. It's kind of back to the sad days of, you know, but I was going to say the sad days of Ernie Banks, Billy Williams, Ron Santo, but at least then there were star players. There just wasn't enough commitment around them to, you know, to build a fully winning team, but at least they had some name value guys to go out and watch.
When do you think they'll be good again then?
I don't have the imagination. You know, they got really, you know, they used the draft smartly, but that was Theo Epstein's operation, not Jed Hoyer's. And they've lost a lot of front office brain drain in the last 5 years. And they don't have the commitment from ownership. So I love Nick Madrigal. You know, if I were them, I would sign Nick Madrigal and Wilson Contreras to long-term contracts tomorrow and say, we've got a couple of guys. I think Madrigal is going to win batting titles. And I think if you look at how he started his career, he's historically, he just might be the next Pete Rose. I mean, he's going to be that kind of a player. So I love those two guys. But Wilson's not that far away from leaving. And, you know, Madrigal is not at a stage where he has to be paid much. So it's sort of a different deal. But I don't know, if I was teams like the Dodgers and certainly the Cardinals and the Brewers, I would be having a party every day about what's not happening in Chicago.
Bill, let me ask you this. Let's move now to the White Sox. How surprising, how impressive has their season been?
Really impressive. You know, and Jerry Reinsdorf's commitment, you know, I think you can financially question the wisdom of going to get Craig Kimbrell when you already had Liam Hendricks. You know, some of their spending might even be over the top, but you have to give ownership credit for seeing the window and seizing it. And, you know, I go back to after the 2019 season, it wasn't even clear they were going to keep Jose Abreu. If you remember, he filed for free agency. They made him a qualifying offer, But there was a serious thought that another team would scoop down and sign him away. And probably there's, a lot of teams that wish now they had done that, that they had been aggressively pursued Jose Abreu, because, you know, he is the real stuff. He's everything you want in a ball player, and he keeps driving in runs. And if sabermetrics devalues RBIs, he does a lot of other things that they value, you know, including being a really tough out at the plate. And he's made himself into a pretty good defensive first baseman, at least an average one. And he's one of the best leaders in baseball. So I can't come up with really a negative about the White Sox. I mean, it's their, a lot of their bullpen arms didn't pitch well this year, guys that did pitch well last year. But that is somewhat the cyclical nature of relievers and short sample sizes, guys that come in and face, you know, three guys at a time, and that makes or breaks their months and their seasons. But, you know, I love the La Russa hiring when it was made, and I did not think, you know, Rick Renteria would have been a great unknown as manager of this team, because he never managed a team like it. And Tony has managed teams like this since the 1980s. And he, you know, I think he's the exact right guy now to prepare the team as they, you know, get to the playoffs with this big lead in the American League Central. They'll probably clinch mid-September and then spend the rest of the month resting guys, you know, trying to get guys an edge to go into the playoffs. And, you know, La Russa's the exact right guy. That wasn't an easy hire to make, and it was a very unpopular hire with a lot of people. But, you know, I think it was 100% the right move. And, I think we've seen it already, but if not, we'll certainly see it, I think, in October.
How far do you see him going this year?
You know, I think the three best teams in baseball are the Dodgers, the Astros, and the White Sox. So, you know, I think they're no guarantee. You know, you look at all those Atlanta Brave teams that were really, truly complete teams, well managed, and they won one World Series in a run of 13 division championships. That tells you how fickle October can be. But, you know, I think the championship series should be them versus the Astros, with the winner playing the Dodgers in the World Series. And I think you could flip a coin in all those series and probably project it as well as you could, you know, when we sit down, in a month with all of the final stats and, you know, all the information we'll have. I think you could probably just flip a coin right now and be just as accurate.
More to come with Bill Rogers in just a moment. Stay tuned. Vince Yance, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Rogers, still here on Sports Talk Chicago. Bill, two more questions before we finish up. First off, the harshest reaction to one of your Twitter opinions was what?
I'm somewhat proud to say that I don't really keep that stuff with me. You know, I do know there's certain persistent critics in Chicago that didn't matter what I said, there was, you know, I was going to get blasted, whether it was, I wasn't 30 years old. I wasn't, for whatever reason, I wasn't one of the cool kids. I don't know exactly why. And, you know, I just never really paid attention to it because, you know, I've written about baseball a long time, and I've been right more often than I've been wrong, for sure. And, you know, I know people in the sport. I've watched a billion games, and I trust my own institutional knowledge, not somebody else's knee-jerk opinion that what I said is wrong. So, you know, honestly, I've tried not to take it too seriously. If I knew the person who was being critical, it was always a little harder on me, because then sometimes you can feel it's personal. But honestly, there's no one thing, John.
Bill, before we finish up today, last question. Is it true that you were a backup second baseman and center fielder in high school?
It's 100% true. I'll tell you why I didn't get a little more playing time and run was I was in Denton, Texas, and we had a good baseball program, and we had a great baseball coach of the high school team who had seen me play since I was batting leadoff on a team that won the city championship when I was 12.
Wow.
And that was, you know, I do have a patch in my office from when I was a Pee Wee League All-Star at probably age 7 or 8. And it's one of the proudest things I've held on to through the years. I started off with a future in the game, but not a lot of tools. And then Texas being a football mad state, I did not play football, and we switched. Our really good baseball coach was replaced by a football coach when I got to the high school varsity. And it's fair to say, you know, I wasn't going to beat out the number one running back on our team for playing time. So, you know, I kind of, like a lot of guys, maybe like Theo Epstein, there at Brookline High in Boston, you know, I started watching the game a different way and loving the practices and not having to get validation with the playing time. And, you know, it's a definite link in my lifelong love of baseball was that little bit of period when I actually got to play the game. I loved every minute I was on a field.
Well, Phil, thank you so much for joining me. Always a pleasure to have you on and talk baseball. Best wishes as the season ramps up here. We get to the postseason. Looking forward to our next conversation. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, John.
Great talk there with Phil Rogers. And that'll do it for us today here on Sports Talk Chicago. Big thank you to Phil Rogers himself, Matt Dubiel, WCKG, Jim DeTobin, to Marlboro Entertainment for making this show a success. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluum. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Another great show comes your way tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. Till then, stay safe, and so long, everyone.
No! No!
Where are the turtles?